Join me, Dr. Cathy Weston, for my monthly podcast series, Get a Grip, where I try and unpick some of the trickier questions relating to how we raise children today. How do we talk to children about mental health? Where do we draw the line when it comes to screen time? Do children need both parents? Whose responsibility is the mental health education of our children, teachers or parents? These podcasts will get me talking and you thinking. I've reached out to today's thought leaders and main speakers in this area. I've asked them their views on the areas where we need to get a grip.
Hello and welcome to the Get a Grip podcast with parenting expert Dr. Cathy Weston and this week with me, Jackie Oatley. Are you a parent who's stressed out? Is there any other kind of parent at the moment? Are your children left to their own devices, literally? How do we reduce their screen time while cracking on with our own work and other tasks? How do we ensure our kids emerge from this pandemic as resilient, well-educated young people without the negative side effects? So many questions. So thank goodness Dr. Cathy is here to help us all and to save the day. She's a leading UK expert in parenting engagement, and her advice is based on the very latest research evidence. And with two boys of her own, at least one parent around here is absolutely nailing it then. Right, Cathy?
Well, I wouldn't go that far, Jackie, because recently in another talk that I was giving in a school, I literally showed them a slide of my kitchen, a picture of my kitchen and the mayhem that has ensued. So I think we're all juggling. We're all trying our best. And, you know, some things will not be as important in lockdown. Certainly in my house, let's say it's a bit more messier than it normally would be pre-pandemic.
Well, I'm glad to hear you're not perfect, because I've been to your parenting talks. I've been to about three or four of them. And that's the reason that I asked you this week if I could host a podcast for you, because a number of my friends went to your talk last week on Zoom, of course, and they were absolutely raving about your techniques, and other parents were stressed out and said, oh, I just didn't get a chance to go on it. So I thought if we could do this podcast, then people anywhere in the country, anywhere in the world, frankly, can pick it up, put it down whenever they have chance, and hopefully benefit from all your expertise. So I'm absolutely chuffed to bits that you're here to answer some of the key questions. So, I mean, how are you finding lockdown and homeschooling yourself? Is it a doddle because your boys are a little bit older?
You know, it really is easier because my children are 11 and 14. And I really feel for parents of children of much younger, they definitely have it harder, I think, than I would have with the ages my children are, because they're self-sufficient. They can get up in the morning, they make their own breakfast, they shower themselves, they go to their desks, they have great online provision and remote learning provided for them. So all I do is occasionally go in and give them a drink and biscuit when it's time for drink and biscuit in the normal school schedule. And sometimes I see them for lunch. So, you know, it's a walk in the park. If your children are older, self-sufficient and motivated, it is not easy. If you have multiple children, also, I work for myself. I don't have a boss to negotiate with. So, you know, we really want to come together here and try and provide as many ideas and tips for our fellow parents who are finding it harder and whose children aren't as motivated and whose schools maybe are not providing the provision that's easy to follow or whatever it is. So we're all in it together. And by sharing tips and ideas that each of us have picked up from speaking to friends, etc., we can hopefully, parents listening can take away one or two things to go and try, you know, tomorrow or Monday, just to sort of see if things improve.
Brilliant. We'll go into specific scenarios in just a moment. But what's your general overall advice for homeschooling without tears and tantrums?
Well, I think it's very important to think about the sort of the structure of your family setup at the moment. So before we think about learning and sitting down with pencil and paper, you know, we have to look holistically at everyone's schedule in your house. And you need to be, this is the time to be very, very regimented and highly, highly organized. So on a Sunday, you might look at everyone's week. And I might find there's a time on a Wednesday at 3 to 4 where I cannot be disturbed. How are we going to shift things around? You know, you need to map out where everyone is ahead of time and make sure that everyone's needs are as met as far as possible. If you know that there is one lesson that your child really struggles with and requires you to be by their side, then you need to ring fence that time. If you know you have a very important meeting or something to do where you have to do it, then you have to think who else can take over and do the children's lunch, for example, during that period. That's easier said than done if you're living, if you're co-parenting with a resident co-parent. If you're on your own, you know, you have to think outside the box, who else can step in? So just to give you a lovely little idea that I've used with one of my neighbors, you know, she needed to teach. She needed to teach between 3 and 4 p.m. So I was minding her child virtually and keeping him entertained and asking him to tell me stories and show me things in his playroom. So I was doing a little bit of virtual babysitting. But you need to look at the week ahead absolutely holistically. And if the school does provide you with a timetable, it is extremely helpful, certainly for younger children, to have a visual timetable for Monday. So take it small steps at a time. What does Monday look like for each of my children? Where can they come together in terms of break time? You know, what lovely thing can we match our lunch time so that we can come together as a family? And that may mean a non-resident parent on Zoom having lunch with you. So we're trying to create a sense of timetable, a new timetable that takes advantage of where everyone is doing, how they're doing, how they're feeling, and really thinking about those moments of family community that we can bring in. Again, if you have a meeting to attend, something really important that you must be at, potentially a grandparent can read a story to your child over Zoom while you're busy, but that has to be booked in the diary. Grandparents like to know these things in advance. And you can share that story, you know, the task that the child has been given with the grandparent, say between 1 and 2, could you please read them that story? So children need a diversity of adults in their life. Other people can chip in, your neighbor, your best friend might be able to help your child with their maths while you're busy. But all of these things need to be pre-booked and really thought through. So I know some of the women in my circle who are coping really well are certainly outsourcing. They're asking for help. They're asking around their WhatsApp group. You know, maybe one parent can supervise maths homework on Zoom with 3 different children, because children are very, very good at shared learning tasks and they're actually used to working together in that way in the classroom. So don't be afraid to mix it up a bit. But your friend is organization and outsourcing as a first step, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a brilliant idea. And in the first couple of days when we suddenly had homeschooling thrust upon us, I have to admit, we were very disorganized. We didn't really have a plan. I was trying to do other tasks and bits of work, and it was all very stressful. And then the following week, I thought, I'm going to try the rough timetable that the teacher in my little boy's year 2 class had put out. And I suddenly found myself being really organized. And we were going for a big family walk early, getting some exercise in, 8 o'clock in the morning, printing out all the schoolwork when it came out at 8 after that. Breakfast, and then sitting at the table at 9 o'clock. And then we found that starting the most difficult task, which for my 6-year-old is English, getting that done when he's fresh from the walk. And even though it's still hard and the juggling's still hard and we still have issues, of course, but I found that organization, as you suggested, so, so helpful. And perhaps something else, Kathy, that people might find useful when you're talking about people doing work Zooms and then grandma or grandpa talking to children, reading a story. I can imagine people listening to this thinking, hang on a minute, I'm not sure my bandwidth can cope with all that. And something I found as a solution I'm talking to you on now is wired broadband, where you get an Ethernet cable and buy the attachment from Amazon or wherever into your laptop, and you have much stronger, faster internet. So you can do your work Zoom on that directly plugged into the broadband, and the children can be on the Apple Mac or whatever it is, or iPad or phone, chatting to grandparents. But really good idea that from you.
Well, that's a brilliant tip as well. I think beyond routine and organization, we need to set the tone. You know, we need to get especially younger children into, you know, this is a school day. And often it can help psychologically for children to get into their school uniform. Now, you know, other parents might think, well, I just want them in their pajamas because they're comfortable. I would urge parents to set the tone. Well, we're at school now. The lesson's starting. You know, so children are actually very used to being, you know, instructed, and it's maths time. The teacher's doing their very best, presumably on the live lesson or whatever it is, and to set the tone. With my 11 and 14 year old, it's like, right, boys, shower time, get into your colored shirt, get ready for school. I come and say, are you online? Have you registered? So I am setting the tone. I am maintaining the expectations that this is a school day. And when you come together at the end of the day, I ask them the same questions. How did you get on at school today? Tell me one thing you learned that was quite exciting. What was difficult today? Have you done your homework? Have you got any homework? So I'm trying to maintain that tone, because in addition to our worries about children's mental health and well-being, we should be concerned about learning loss. We need to stay. We may be in this situation for God knows how long, and we need to maintain that sense of children being at school and, you know, just feeding into working in alignment with the schools and the teachers as much as possible. So putting on the uniform in the morning can, you know, encourage children to get into that mindset. I think it's very important where children are doing their schoolwork in your home. So the more, certainly with younger children, that you can mimic, you know, sometimes just putting a little pencil pot on their table has encouraged a 5 or 6 year old to get into that mindset. Even the pencil pot from school, I know one parent who went and got it. It smelt of school, it was school, it's on the table. So there are little things that will always make a big difference to children. That's why I've had drink and biscuit time. I bring it in when they are, that's their little treat at school that my children still love to have. So we're retaining a lot of familiar routines and trying very hard to introduce that tone. Otherwise, children are, you know, they just kind of, it all falls apart. They don't really feel like they should do this because they're not at school. And I think that we can set up struggles if we maintain that kind of, you know, Christmas holiday mindset. You know, we're back at school now. We maintain our learning. We still do what the teacher says. And I think that is important.
Well, I can just imagine people listening to this thinking some great tips in there, but some of them will also be thinking, that's great that your boys will just sit down and do their schoolwork, but their children, maybe of different ages or just a different mentality perhaps, just won't do it, just don't want to learn, just can't do anything on their own without the parents sitting next to them all day and focusing on it with them. And even if they do, they might still rail against it. What do you say to them?
So if you have younger children who are struggling to sit down and do it, first of all, the teacher is always your ally. So you could ask the teacher to directly ask them to do the task, to ask them how they're getting along, to tell them that I'm going to check in 20 minutes and see. So, you know, teachers will have a lot to contribute in that space. The other thing is, I would recommend, you know, sand timers, like, you know, making sure children have a visual idea of how long this lesson will last. So I would always gently nudge children to doing what is required of them, but trying to give them a little bit of choice within it. So, you know, which sand timer do you want? You know, this one, blue one, yellow one, you know, this maths lesson, all you need to do is concentrate on that, what the teacher's saying, until that goes, the sand moves into the bottom of the glass. So can you mix it up a bit? Can you help them have a sense of time and perspective? Younger children are just sitting there looking into the garden thinking, I'm at home, why can't I go and play? Why can't I get into the garden? Why can't I go and play with the dog? So we need to give them again that visual timetable. So on a Sunday night, you might have little laminated cards, and these are things children of primary age are very familiar with. And they might put the clothes peg and they work out which subject comes next and when they're going to have their break time. This will be in every primary school class in the country. And it's their job to tell mummy or daddy what their timetable is on a Monday, and they have to choose the subjects and they pin it to the little piece of rope, and they're able to tell the other parent what they're going to be doing the next day. But mummy says, I can have my break time here and we're going to walk the dog. Children like to know what's coming next, and they are used to that. And when they know what's coming next, it does reduce anxiety. So get your clothes pegs, get your laminated cards that the children, you know, they have agency in that process. So every night you might say, what's coming up next? and they're able to pin up the day. So there's a sense of expectation built into that. It does reduce anxiety, and it will reduce your anxiety as the parent as well, because you have already set in motion, set expectations as to when break time is, when school is over, and the lovely, lovely things that we will do together after school, because all children need a sense of things to look forward to. So coming up, giving children a choice as to those leisure activities that we'll do together. Will we climb a tree? Will we skip a rope? Will we go round the block? You know, what will we do? Will we play a board game? Will we bake? So you can hear that I'm gently suggesting we maintain routine and that we introduce as much agency into that process as we possibly can. I hope that's helpful. In terms of the actual motivating, children need to use their own pencil case. We need them, if they're feeling anxious or they don't want to engage, it's absolutely fine for them to have their cat on their lap. You know, we know that animals can reduce anxiety as well. What matters is that these children are physically comfortable when they're sitting in that lesson. It doesn't matter if they're on their beanbag with the laptop or at a desk, as long as they are comfortable where they are sitting and they understand how long this lesson will be. How long will I be expected to sit here? Remember, they can't interact with their friends. So it's quite a difficult, they're not used to that at a very young age. So it is about experimenting with some of those softer things, you know, giving them a little box of raisins to nibble while they're listening to the school assembly is absolutely fine. What we want to focus on is maintaining their concentration for those little periods of time. We don't want to give them too much permission to ignore the teacher and not concentrate. Sometimes parents with younger children, when they are not in the room, the child is actually more used to, you know, speaking and interacting with the teacher, and a parent sometimes can distract them from that. So you need to experiment with that depending on the age of your child. With much older children, like my children's age, it's a matter of, have you done your homework? I'm expecting you to concentrate. You know, I bring them in a few snacks. I check that they're behaving themselves. I check that they're speaking to the teacher politely, et cetera, et cetera. So you can be much more authoritative.
What if they're given a task at whatever age? I mean, I'm thinking primary school at the moment, but I guess it still applies. And what if they just take so long to do it, despite you encouraging them and despite doing all the things you've just suggested? And in my case, I've been trying to do those things. I used a countdown timer on my iPad yesterday, which really helped. So he had a visual of how long it was till his break time. But what if it still takes ages and still doesn't want to focus and just wants to have fun and dance around and act things out? And therefore you haven't done it within that time and you haven't done it half an hour later. Do you just stop and not complete that particular task? Or do you just keep doing it unless, even if it takes 3 hours?
I think that I personally would not stop till that task was done and reflect a little bit more on what's happening in the interaction between you. So sometimes children pick up on your anxiety, my anxiety, and they just want to muck around. And I think it's all about, right, what tasks do you have to do today? Mommy, I have to do this sheet. I have to fill out this sheet. You know, and you might say, great, well, let's get on with it. Off you go. Let's see what you can do. So we have to think about the tone of it. Where they start slowing down, think about it individually as parents. What's happening in that interaction? Are they being distracted by the dog? Are they distracted? Are they struggling with their work and you're not sure how to nudge them through it? So we need to just think a little bit about what happens in those interactions. Maybe you can provide some context, Jackie, you know, of what your experience has been or what your friend's experience has been in those moments.
Well, it's interesting because my husband and I have completely different approaches. He's super strict, no fun at all, but he's really good at getting the work done quickly. Whereas I'm much more touchy-feely, bring the subject to life, act things out, try and make it fun, but then it takes hours. So I guess we probably need to find a happy medium somewhere because I want the kids to enjoy their work. I don't want it to be full of, you know, stress and drama and negatives. But equally, I really don't want to be doing English over 2 or 3 hours every morning.
So you've answered the question. In your household, one approach is working to get the tasks done. Mm. And whilst I agree with you, it needs to be fun, but not at that point. The fun bit comes after the school task. So both of you are right, but one of you is getting the job done in a particularly authoritative way. And that is what children are used to in the classroom. They're not used to going out and jumping on the trampoline to do their maths. They are used to being on task. So I think that this is a good explanation as why one parent, their approach has worked. So stick to it. But it might be, you know, Jackie's on duty in the afternoon when you're out on the trampoline and you're talking about the learning in a different way and you're going on learning walks and you're opening up the discussion. You are finding it's just about observing what's working for you as a family and sticking to it. Inconsistency is never a good idea for children. So we want to maintain the consistency, and this will only be for this period of lockdown. What works, ditch what doesn't, and children will appreciate that clarity as well. So if that's helpful, you know, mixing it up a bit is difficult for children to sort of ascertain what direction to go in.
I'm absolutely devastated. You just told me my husband's right. He must not listen to this podcast under any circumstances. I just tried to bring it to life a little bit and make him learn around the subject and teach him new words and spellings and everything. But it does
that
take
stuff
time.
Is right. Absolutely critical. But getting the school task done has to be done. Now, what you've just described is one of the richest things that you can do to promote and nurture your child's academic attainment and good for their emotional well-being. And that is bringing the learning to life, but it doesn't happen during those tasks. So what you could do is potentially the comprehension was on the subject of castles or something, but they have to get the comprehension done, right? And our job within that interaction is gentle nudges. It is not telling them the answer. It's not telling them off. It's patience. And this is, of course, what teachers have in spades that maybe we don't. But just saying, darling, what do you think? You know, it's a real, well done, keep going. I'm going to go and make a cup of tea. I'll come back and see how you're getting on. That's the tone of it. If we're standing over children when they're doing their work, sometimes that can be very anxiety inducing. So we need to look at what's working and what's not working. But beyond that, when the school day ends, then you might be talking about castles, looking up castles, going to your nearby castle, looking at pictures of castles. So there is a time and a place for family learning. The weekends are now the richest. We will never have a better opportunity in our lives to enrich our children's learning, to getting them thinking, enriching their, you know, broadening their vocabulary, developing their confidence and social skills. The time is now. But just getting the labor done of the school tasks is important. So you're right. And he's right. And we just need to put those in the right place in the family jigsaw of home learning.
Okay, a question from a father here. Our issue is that if the schoolwork set for my child is not completed each day, you think that the school will take a dim view of you as a parent. That in itself can cause some anxiety. I mean, can you put his mind at rest?
Well, first of all, remember, teachers are our allies. Teachers are very understanding. Many of them are working with their own small children at home. So I think the first thing you should do is just, you know, make sure that you've communicated that fear to the school. And in my experience, schools are very, very understanding at the moment. But the other thing is, you know, it's all about communication, isn't it? Making sure that the school knows that you're trying to manage a job. Context matters. So always try and communicate with the school if you're really struggling to get that stuff done. Hopefully some of the tips that we've given will encourage parents to, you know, to find a way of getting through that schoolwork well. Maybe not with you being there, but maybe other people contributing to that. So it is about aiming for that, but also managing the expectations of the school. So there might be a really difficult, maybe your house has been flooded. You know, you need to communicate that with the school. You're worried about device shit. You can't find the right number of devices. You need to tell the school. The schools are there for us. They're not sort of trying to make us accountable. They are understanding. So always talk to them about that.
Another question from a father. This one's from John Driscoll, a football commentator, actually. Where's the balance between keeping up school performance and cutting your kids some slack? Because this isn't school, is it? They don't have the discipline of the teacher telling them what to do and or asking them to have that kind of discipline of the school classroom. It is very different at home, and it's our parents who they're used to seeing at evenings and weekends. What do you say to John?
Well, first of all, we don't want our children struggling academically when they go back to school, because that's a whole other story. And he's absolutely right. We need to put our energies into making sure our children have a balance of activity, which they're normally used to. You know, they're used to playing in the playground. They're used to running around. They're used to peer interaction, and they've been denied all of it. So the answer, if you like, is around balance, is maintaining that expectation that we do our schoolwork, but now it's not playground time, it's playtime in a different way. And I mention play because we know that children are struggling with their mental health and well-being across the country and across age groups. And it is our absolute top of our agenda is making sure that whilst we're keeping an eye on their learning and, you know, doing our best, that our children are able to process what's happening. They are denied the ability to do that through peer play. And it's in all of our interests to make sure your child has maximum access to fun and games and humor in family life, laughing a lot. This is the real engine room for children's mental health. So, you know, John needs to focus on all of it. He needs to work out, where can they play? How can they play? How can I attune to what they're interested in? When can I sit on the floor with them and play Lego? And, you know, play is their primary language of communication. And it's one of the main methodologies that children use to cope and process. So you might see young children playing Sylvanian families, and suddenly one of the, you know, the daddy or the mommy's wearing a mask, or you might see children putting a mask on their teddy or hand sanitizing before they play a game. And you will see patterns in children's play as they process. And this is extremely important, processing what is happening to them. You know, they're trying to make sense. So we need to keep an eye on their mental health. We need to keep an eye on their well-being. And one of the main ways of doing that is playing with them. So the school day, the day needs to have a component involving imaginative play. You know, you might be busy, but set up a den in the garden, try and bring some diversity to the play, or a hut in the living room. You know, we all used to love doing that with the sofas and the sheets. That kind of play is good for your child, but it's really good for them at this point in time. Or making sure we bring out some creative arts, paint, tactile things, sensory things, things that allow children to experience the diversity of activity that maybe they would have had in school. So think about what you have at home: cardboard, boxes, paint, you know, allow them to make a mess somewhere in your house once a week, you know, allow them to have that sort of, you know, engagement with the physical world and engagement with toys that will balance the demands of the academic curriculum.
Yeah, so stick to the curriculum, stick to the set hours and the breaks you're suggesting, but then make sure there's plenty of play built in as well, so they're not missing out.
Absolutely. I mean, that's really, really important. And we know that younger children in particular are quite lonely over the pandemic. So again, as counterintuitive as it is, because they're spending so much time on screens, there isn't a mental health researcher in the country who would suggest we keep children away from each other, even in the online world. So that is really important. The greatest moment of my week is hearing my children laughing when they are online, you know, playing with their friends, you know. So I'm so happy to hear that kind of laughter. You know, when Fortnite broke the other night in our house, that's the first time in my life I've panicked and thought, oh my God, we need Fortnite. You know, that's the only time of the day where he's interacting and enjoying, you know, having a laugh with his mates. And that's really important when you're 14.
There are a lot of parents, Kathy, who are both working all day and under pressure from their bosses to get the work done, to prove they are doing it, even though their bosses probably know that they're homeschooling as well. So parents are trying to get their children to get on with their work themselves. And a question here has come in asking how you keep your child motivated throughout the school working day with little or no adult interaction, and to get them to concentrate on schoolwork without getting distracted.
I think that parents need to remember that when you, as soon as you see your child get out their schoolwork in the morning, bring out their pencil, sit patiently waiting for the teacher to come online, you really need to comment on it. So one of the ways to motivate children is through that glorious experience of receiving parental praise. And when we give praise, you know, we're the only people in their lives at the moment, you know, so it's important that we say, do you know what? I'm so proud of you, the way you sat down this morning and got your pencil case out. You know, everybody needs to feel valued and appreciated and to have that kind of feedback. So one of the great gifts of parental praise is when you give it in a particular way, it'll be heavily motivating. So try not to just give it out, you know, like, oh, well done, you know, that's great. Be sincere, you know, take your glasses off and say, wow, the way you can concentrate, I am deeply impressed with your levels of concentration. You know, Daddy, did you see this? This is a bit. So, you know, you want to give praise that feels sincere and feels quite novel. And you'd be amazed how far that type of praise will go. So our children are already amazingly resilient and so patient. And we forget, because they've been maybe well behaved all day, they've done their homework, we forget to comment on it. And we really, really need to. So that's one of my key points about motivation. You and I feel motivated by praise. So children do as well. And just making sure we're praising the right thing. And it's the praising of their patience, the praising of their persistence, the praising of their ability to sit there when you know they wanted to be outside on the slide. So that's a very good thing to experiment with in your parenting.
It absolutely works as well, because having been to your talks before, it's one of the key things I took away was praising the effort, not necessarily the outcome, because you're going to have some children who find maths an absolute doddle. So if you're praising them for getting 10 out of 10, it doesn't really mean as much as if there's something that they're not so good at, perhaps, but they've worked so hard at, even if they've got, say, 4 out of 10, it's the effort. And it really works. You see their little chests puff out and their beaming grins. And it really helps for next time as well.
Well, and the other point that you're making, Jackie, which is really important and feeds into their emotional resilience, is, and it's very counterintuitive in lockdown, but children relish challenge. We need them to feel, you know, it's still important that they have intellectual stretch in lockdown and have access to activities that are challenging. So, you know, we want a family courage culture. We still want the parent to say, you know, if my son says to me, oh, mommy, I got all my maths right, it was so easy, I'll say, well, that sounds really, really boring. You know, we're a family that likes a challenge. Maybe you can ask the teacher for extra sums. You know, we're the family that likes to do extension work. You know, we like a challenge. But when you get children into the physical sphere, into the woods, into the park, into the garden at the weekend, especially at the moment, try and cultivate an appetite for adventurous play. Don't be afraid to let them climb that tree, even though it's stomach churning to watch, because this is where they will begin to experience, you know, the limits of their own physical endurance and feel, you know, that arousal, that adrenaline where comes with, you know, going down the big slide or climbing the tree, or, and they're really being taken away from those experiences that they would have in school. So be a family that relishes challenge in lockdown, whether it be intellectual, whether it be physical. Model it, talk about the challenges that you're going to set yourself. And something that is critically important for parents of children of all ages is goal setting. Goal setting is critically important for teenage mental health. We know it can alleviate the symptoms of depression and anxiety, and it's important for us. So take each week at a time, set small, achievable goals. So when you set out on that Sunday night, and you've mapped out the week, and everybody knows where they're going, and you're not thinking beyond that week, try and articulate and establish some little goals. So you might say, you know, I'd really like to go for a longer run at the end of this week. Or Daddy might say, well, I want to do this or that. Or so try and set goals and help your children recognize when they've achieved them to reflect on that. You know, how did you manage to do 5 laps of the common? Oh my God, tell me how you did that. So we are keeping an eye on their self-esteem. And if their self-esteem starts to wobble during lockdown, everything will wobble, because that is the main structure of their emotional house. So self-esteem, high self-esteem will predict resilience. So if you're going to focus on anything, let's focus on self-esteem, which comes from positive praise, which comes from someone noticing and caring and tuning into who they are. Self-esteem is built through physical activity and doing things you didn't even think you were capable of. And during lockdown, it might be little physical challenges like getting back on a bicycle, which can feel so weird when you haven't done it for a while, or skateboarding, little things that feel exhilarating. So I think it is all about small achievable goals. It is all about taking each week at a time and mapping it out and peppering it with joyful experiences, the little things we can look forward to, maybe little culinary treats and snacks. So you're peppering it with a sort of a diversity of experience as far as possible.
Yeah, I mean, your talks that I've been to before, so much of them are about resilience, which is quite handy now that we've come into these lockdowns, which you need so much resilience, and encouraging children to do things for themselves, giving them the tools for life so that they're not reliant on other people. I mean, what other tools can you give people apart from praising them, apart from getting them to do little things which push their own boundaries, running a bit faster, getting back on a bike? What else would you say that people can do for themselves, children, to build that resilience that is absolutely essential at the moment?
So I think, again, it's counterintuitive for parents at the moment that, you know, you want to mollycoddle and keep them safe and make sure. But actually, that is not particularly what children need. Children always want to feel grown up. They want to make progress. They want to feel strong and competent and smart. And they have to have opportunities to do that. If you're making your 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds lunch every day, well, how are they going to feel competent? I mean, my 11-year-old will cook the dinner every night, unpack the dishwasher, pack it again. He feels better at the end of that. He doesn't feel like I'm being a bad parent. And this will help everybody, because the chores are stacking up and these children need to do chores, because you are sending the message out that we are a family unit, no matter how big or small your family is. And this is a tough time and we're all going to chip in. So you choose which chores you're going to do this week, because we're all going to do them. We're all going to take turns making the dinner. Children are extremely competent. And remember, we're looking at their self-esteem. So ask yourself, is my child going to feel better or worse about themselves by me buttering their bread? Buttering, it might make you and I feel better that we're a great parent, but actually great and effective parenting is about keeping our eye on the longer prize. So I have a 14-year-old. In 4 years' time, he will be in a halls of residence in some university, probably somewhere elsewhere in the country. Will he be able to survive? Will he be able to cook for himself? Will he be able to establish social connections? Will he be able to cope in isolation? You know, will he be able to work independently? So the building blocks of this critical skill set begin in family life. And lockdown is an amazing time when you're present in your house to make sure they're getting along and doing things that are tricky, but make them feel good about themselves. So chores are critically important, but also remembering we're trying to nurture sort of an emotional independence as well. We know that overprotection does not make children more resilient. So now is your time to have those gorgeous, rich family discussions about the world in age-appropriate ways, develop their little voice, talking about these things around the dinner table, because we know that the quality of dialogue in the family home is one of the greatest levers for academic attainment. And it is also one of the engine rooms for that emotional resilience. So talk about the world, share your worries, share your strategies for coping. You can hear that there's a rich training ground that is in family life. So we don't want to mollycoddle too much. You know, we want to have the tone of family life should be a balance of everybody chipping in, everybody goal setting, everybody doing their work coming back together at the end of the day, sort of metaphorically.
Did you think we as a society are perhaps spending way too much time on gadgets? We as parents checking in on our work emails so often and not making that time to sit round the dinner table or on a sofa without the television on, just talking about what we've done with our day and parents opening up about issues, not too serious ones, but ones we face too, and asking each other questions. Is that a really good way of bringing us all together? And do we need to schedule that time?
I'm afraid to say during lockdown, you do need to schedule it because otherwise it doesn't happen. Let's be frank. It's easy after dinner, just sit on the sofa and everybody's doing their own thing. But really what is ideal, and it's fun, and if you are co-parenting and you're part of a couple, my suggestion is, and this is where, you know, one partner might go, oh no, Kathy suggested that, you know, you should give your partner 20 minutes of your time. That's all, 20 minutes of just listening. So my husband's like, oh God, I have to do my 20 minutes, but it doesn't matter. The point is that that 20 minutes of having me offload, share just what's in my mind, what I'm worried about. I don't even want him to provide the solutions. I want him to listen actively to me. So schedule in the 20 minutes, even if it's only twice a week, you know, because let's be realistic. Let's set some targets and see how it feels. Now you can elevate that idea to something really special, which may not happen that often, which is actually being held while you're talking or holding hands while someone is listening to you. There is nothing richer in the world than for a couple to look at one another and hold each other's hand or cuddle one another and listen. So that does not happen routinely in millions of households. And it's something that is a game changer. It can really shift the tone between you and it can be rich and wonderful to do. The other thing is, if you have children who are real worriers or you're anxious yourself, the research does suggest that having a constructive worry time is a good idea. So if you've got children who are quite young, we're not talking about 2 hours, we're talking about 10 minutes where we might have our worry time and everybody comes together and they're used to circle time in school. But this is where we're allowed to share our worries. We might have a jar where we put our ideas in the jar that will alleviate the worries. So we're trying to model how we cope when we're feeling overwhelmed or worried. And in that space, everybody's allowed to worry about whatever they like, but we co-create strategies. I have an idea. I know what might help. And it might be called the I know what might help game. I don't know, but it is, we know that where there is constructive worry time, it can really aid children later on in the evening falling asleep. It's certainly the case for teenagers based on Michael Gradisar's research in Australia that they will fall asleep more easily when you've had that constructive worry time earlier in the evening. And that brings me to probably one of the most important points of all about children's learning, mental health, well-being and resilience, and that is about sleep. This is the time to be authoritative about sleep. I cannot begin to tell you how impactful sleep deprivation can be across the board, you know, in every aspect of family life. So we need sleep hygiene. We need to think about sleep. We need to take care of ourselves. We want to avoid the technology in the bedroom. We want to be careful what we're modeling. And we want to think about, how can I have a better night's sleep? You know, how can we wake up in the morning with an oomph? So if you've got a teenager, go into their room and open that blind and let the light come in, wakes their body clock up. So there's a rhythm to the morning. We want those mornings to go well, preferably after a good night's sleep. I personally do not think it's a good idea to tolerate children coming downstairs when they've been put to bed. I think it's a good space to be authoritative in. And that is backed up by the research. We, you know, just it's bedtime. Good night is a good message, because as well, we're trying to ring fence your time in the evening. So don't be afraid to be authoritative. You're not being authoritarian. We know that when children are raised in an authoritative way, and sleep is one of these areas that really tests our, you know, our mettle in holding the line, children's outcomes are absolutely across the board. They're much better. They do better at school. They get on better with their friends. They're more resilient. They do better later in life. So it is a good time to be authoritative. And that goes back to, we don't want to be in Christmas holiday mode. This is school time. This is the school term.
So you're advocating parents keeping to the bedtimes that they had during the normal school routine. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because you will create a rod for your own back when we go back to school. You know, children, especially primary age children, but we know that teenagers as well, there's some fascinating research that setting a bedtime, even for a 14, 15, 16 year old, is associated with much better mental health and has been associated with decreasing the risk of suicide. So authoritative around bedtime is a good idea for the whole family.
And is that only Monday to Friday? Is it okay if they go to bed much later at the weekends?
The research suggests no. The research on sleep issues in primary school children suggests we should maintain the sort of the same bedtime throughout the weekend, because otherwise you end up with an overtired child on a Monday morning. The sleep pressure, you know, when you really want to fall asleep, is just all over the place. Their body clock, you know, doesn't realize if it's a Saturday or a Sunday. So it is a good idea in general to be as consistent as you can in terms of your children's sleep. You know, what benefit does it give a primary age child to stay up till 11 o'clock at night? What benefit does it give a teenager to stay on their Xbox till 4 a.m.? We know teenagers, some teenagers are doing that. It is detrimental to their mental health. It will exacerbate anxiety. It will decrease their ability to conform, and, you know, it can really exacerbate behavioral issues. So sleep is really, really critical as a talking point and a thinking point in family life in general.
So parents who are concerned about anxiety in their children, or maybe their own anxiety that they're then projecting onto their children, you talk about sleep as being one of the ways of combating it. What other pieces of advice do you have to them about anxiety?
Well, this is where self-care is just so critical. And I'm not talking about taking long baths and doing yoga. I'm talking about looking after your own mental health, recognizing anxiety in your own body and thinking, wait a minute, where am I feeling it? When am I feeling it? What helps me? Who's there for me? Who can I talk to as an adult? Can I book in a chat with my friend and offload and talk about how I'm feeling? Can I have my 20 minutes a night? Will that make me feel better? If you are an anxious parent, we know that anxious parents can often have anxious children. That can sometimes be an established pattern. So you start with yourself. Then you talk about anxiety in the whole of family life. So open up the discussion and I was feeling a bit anxious today. So my hands were all sort of sweaty. Everybody gets anxious. So make sure everyone in your family recognizes the difference between having a few butterflies and how that makes you feel. Everybody gets worried and anxious, and having a few butterflies is absolutely fine. But having so many butterflies that you are completely overwhelmed is not fine. So there's a big difference between normal anxiety and problematic anxiety. If your child is so anxious that they won't go to school, that they won't go to the playground, that they are exhibiting very worrying patterns, then it will require clinical assistance and supervision and some professional help. But little butterflies, this is where, you know, you and I need to model that and to say, oh, I'm feeling a bit anxious because I are a bit nerve. I've got a few nerves in my tummy because I'm going to do my podcast. That's helpful for children to hear. They need to know that their parents get nervous as well and need to know what your strategies and my strategies are for coping with that. There is an excellent book for the parents of very anxious children who need an approach. You know, their children, they feel that it is problematic, the level of anxiety that they're experiencing. And that is Kathy Cresswell's book, How to Help Your Child with Fears and Worries. That's an excellent resource. And the general advice, you know, from the anxiety research community is if you do have an anxious child, always welcome, you know, listening to their fears and worries and stay calm and just open up, ask lovely open questions. Tell me what you're thinking. How are you feeling? That sounds scary. You know, I can understand why you might be feeling a little bit anxious, and really getting it all out there and then allowing, coaching the child, coaching the teenager to think about little things that could help, little steps that they might take. So this is a very, very critical area. Also thinking about, if you have an anxious child, what's making it worse? Children can identify that. It might be the news making them worse. It might be social media. It might be comparing themselves to others online. I don't know. But try and be a researcher if you have an anxious child. Where are the trigger points? When are they getting anxious? What seems to make it worse? And they are participants in that process. So the advice in the world of anxiety research is to encourage our children to puzzle it out, to problem solve. And it requires a proactive approach on the part of the parent and the child. Telling them everything will be okay doesn't work. It doesn't help. I think it's actually referred to as the reassurance trap in the anxiety literature. It just won't be effective. So there is very specific advice for parents of anxious children, but it begins with yourself.
As you know, Kathy, there are a lot of stressed out parents out there, if not anxious, just stressed with trying to juggle everything, maybe multiple children, maybe with a parent, if not both of them working, one of them working and constantly asking them to be quiet, and little children don't want to be. So this question: as a parent, when your patience is pushed to the limit, it's so hard not to shout and get cross, which doesn't help. But what advice can you give when they push you to your limit?
Well, first of all, always think in terms of preemptive strikes. So if it really, really gets on your nerves when they interrupt you during your Zoom calls, then that requires a family discussion. And hopefully, having had your Sunday night chat, you'll be able to say, children, remember, it's Wednesday, it's 3 to 4. Look at the timetable. Mommy cannot be disturbed. And I use colored post-it notes. So if there's a red post-it note on my office door, you know, over pain of death, will anyone come into this room? If there's an amber post-it note, you can come in, but be quiet. And if there's a green one, come in, you know, mommy's free. So you need to create your own system of sort of rules during this period. And children, you know, they're very used to these sorts of rules in general, and they can come up with ideas themselves. Also, in terms of self-care as the adult, just think about, you know, what will just shift my mood? What am I stressed about? In my experience, a lot of parents are very stressed because they've got no one to talk to, offload to. There's no fun, there's no joy, there's no laughter in their week. Who is the friend that makes you laugh until you cry? Get on the phone with them. There's always one. And we're all, I mean, if we're lucky, if we have one or two friends where you can ring up and have a really, really good laugh. And it's also fantastic for your children to hear you laughing your head off. And if you do, you know, if you are living with the other co-parent, if you're co-parenting, just your children seeing you have an absolute riot, or muck around, or, you know, just laughing is so good for them. So think about, you know, I've never really watched comedy before, but now I'm doing it on a Friday night. We will watch comedy. We're all back in watching Blackadder. This stuff makes us laugh. And laughter is an extremely important component in resilience. It does take the stress out of the day. So think about, who are my friends who can make me laugh, or that one friend? Equally thinking about, what enhances my mood? So when I sniff my basil plant in my kitchen, I feel fantastic. It just makes me feel good. I don't know why. So there will be things that are just meaningful to you. We've been, you know, putting on the fire on a Saturday night, that makes me feel good. And listening to the radio while I'm drinking my hot chocolate makes me feel good. So what is it that makes you feel good? There is no room for parental guilt at this time. Just don't do guilt. It's a waste of time. You don't need to feel guilty. You are investing in your child's resilience, mental health, well-being, and happiness by looking after yourself and teaching your children what that looks like.
And a quick one from the same mum. She says, as parents, we're human. We do lose our temper from time to time with the kids and we shout. What's the best way to handle your kids after you've calmed down and realised you've handled the whole situation wrong?
Yeah. So first of all, as that lady pointed out, everybody loses their temper. And sometimes my 14-year-old will say to me, "Mummy, you know, you sound really cross, really angry." And I'll say, "Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to sound angry. You know, I'll try and think about why I did that, or why I'll try and change something for the next time." So the absolute key here is being honest with your children and say, "Do you know what? I feel like, you know, I don't want to shout like that. It doesn't sound very nice, does it? I want to do better. I want to." So if you catch me being a bit sharp, I'm absolutely fine with you telling me. So this is a greater discussion about the real role, the precious role of reflecting and showing your children that you're prepared to take that kind of, you know, to take it on the chin and say, "You know, that was unacceptable. I'm very, very sorry I shouted at you in that way. But let's think how you and I can avoid that happening again." So it's always a good idea to say to children, you know, "How are we doing?" And this is where you turn over that stone. You know, it's scary to say, "How am I doing as your mummy?" And because, you know, my children, when I ask that question, they will look at one another and they'll go, "Ooh, we're being asked our opinion." And then suddenly one of them will say, they'll agree, you know, and they'll say, "Mummy, you shout too much in the mornings when we're going to school." And I'll say, "Do you know what? I agree with you. And I think it's because I don't get enough sleep. I haven't had my coffee yet. And there might be an element of your disorganization that contributes to that." And then you end up having a family discussion about what can make the morning go better. So all of us lose our temper, but it's how we manage the after, which is really critical. And that is also echoed in how we argue in the home. There's a lot of research on, it's not that parents shouldn't argue or don't argue, we all argue, but how you argue is very, very important to your children's outcomes. If you're huffing off in the attic for 3 hours and stomping down the stairs when you've had an argument with your partner, that's not an ideal template for arguing. So what we want to, and it's really hard to do, this is really hard, but we all have to try better in this regard. So saying, "I'm going to put my point across," and, you know, if children are overhearing the argument, be very, very careful how you model it. And ideally you reach consensus. And maybe you even end up having a laugh about it. Maybe your children hear you apologizing. That's all good. But we know that hostility or unresolved conflict between parents is damaging to children. It's one of the big indicators of negative outcomes. So this is a good time to think about how we all get along, what we can do better. And one of my tips that I'm giving myself this week has been just to be kinder in my interactions. So sometimes we can be very abrupt with the people we live with, but just to say, "Would you mind, darling, please just tidying up the kitchen for me? Or would you be so kind as to make me a coffee? I'd really appreciate it." And being as polite to the people we live with as we would be to the people we work with. And sometimes we forget. So being affectionate, being warm, being kind to yourself, kind to the people that live with you. You know, you're onto a winner.
Cathy, we could make this pod 2 hours, never mind 1 hour, but I've got to ask you about both screen time and social media. I mean, you touched on screen time already, but how do parents who perhaps have important work to be getting on with, perhaps have other jobs that they have to do, other tasks, how do they get on with those tasks without necessarily leaving their children on gadgets for hours at a time?
So again, you need to be proactive and organized. So the thing about screen time is it's all about balance, okay? You're not going to find a rule book around screen time in the research evidence. Screen time per se is not harmful. What matters is what the child is doing online, okay? So there's a big difference between my child watching, doing Latin for an hour online or watching some inappropriate material. So we need to think about if that child has used up their screen time for, you know, gaming or play for the day, and you're going to be on a work call, well, you need to come up with a task or a purposeful activity or a game that they can get along with. So give them choice. Screen time can be easily managed through, you know, you can turn it off with a parental app. So it shouldn't be too much difficulty. You know, they've used up their hour. the thing turns off. That's easy to organize from a tech perspective, but then there needs to be something else to do. So it might be, you know, they make some pizza or they play a board game with their sibling, but it has to be pre-planned. So you might make a list with your children of 20 things they can do when they're not on a screen, and they refer to that list when there's no screen time. Otherwise, you will end up with, "Mummy, I'm bored." And that's really irritating. So have a selection box of ideas that your children perhaps put together at the weekend. And when they're bored and they're not allowed on the screen because they've used up their quota, they can delve into the ideas jar, okay?
So it sounds again that organisation and planning is absolutely key here. It's one of the threads really of this podcast.
Absolutely, because any conflict or stress or flashpoints, there are patterns to it in family life. So let's be constructive and put in a lot of preemptive work so that you can just say to your child, "Well, you said you're bored, go to the boredom jar, pick out an idea, please." And I think it's important to remain authoritative. I think that's the other theme in this area. So, you know, it is about making sure that children feel purposeful. They are not, it's not a good idea to obviously be on screens for 4 hours a night playing a game. We have to be sensible. We have to, with older children, negotiate that. We have new lockdown screen time rules because they're online all day at school and we're giving them an hour a night to game with their friends. They're 11 and 14. Every household will be different and you have to make up your own rules. However, the new rule in lockdown with us is they have to sign out, they have to rent out their devices. So they have to go into the kitchen, jot down the time they're taking a phone, the time they're going on Fortnite, and they have an hour. And if they use up, if they go beyond that hour, they don't get anything the next day. You know, that's our family rule. It's been negotiated. So you're trying to teach slightly older children to regulate their own time and to be responsible. But in an authoritative household, there are consequences for breaching rules. So there's a space for, you know, a renegotiation of screen time during lockdown because it is a very particular situation. And you mentioned social media. Again, there isn't a mental health researcher in the country who would deny teenagers, not younger children, teenagers, the opportunity to be on social media and engaging with their friends. And the key thing is that can be an absolutely fantastic way of alleviating loneliness and, you know, promoting connection. But if your teenager is feeling vulnerable, it can be quite a problematic space. So there seems to be some emerging research saying that, you know, think about your own teenager. How are they interacting with social media? Are they scrolling endlessly, endlessly for hours on end? And is that ending up with them feeling rubbish about themselves? And obviously that's not good. And there's some fascinating research, again, coming out of Australia, looking at particular apps being associated with particular eating disordered behaviors. So my message is to think about how your teenager uses social media. Stay close to them, ask them what they're interested in, ask them to talk about the apps that they use, get them to think about how does that app make me feel. So they have to really look after themselves in that space. And of course, all families should be making sure at the moment that their child is interacting nicely to other people online, being kind to their friends, their teachers, being safe online. And this is a constant, constant conversation with all children. So it's my personal opinion that children should not have access to social media, you know, under the age of 13, certainly because of the problematic, you know, risks associated with it. But all families should have established digital values, rules, and consequences for breaching those.
In terms of the amount of time they spend on these gadgets, you can just picture that a lot of children will finish their schoolwork, say at around 3 o'clock, perhaps. And then all they want to do then is flop on the sofa with an iPad. And actually, it really suits parents because that's the time that they can actually finally get some peace and quiet and get on with the work or the jobs they have to do, whether it's ordering the shopping or whatever it is. You can see millions of families around the country who are doing just that. But are you saying to them that they shouldn't be doing that? I mean, what's your ideal template? Should they be extending it till 5 o'clock or having activities planned in advance until 6 o'clock? What do you say to people? Because I think it'll affect so many people.
I think ideally the school day's done and then there has to be some physical activity. And that might be, I don't know what time that might be at, but you're trying to teach your children that it's good to take a break from screens for their eyesight, for their posture. That's where the evidence does suggest that prolonged use can cause harm. So it's about a kind of a nice balance and a rhythm to the day. You know, it's easier if your child has siblings. If your child has siblings, then you can encourage them to do something physical together. But it's just about saying, listen, I want you to play with your friends, but maybe, and this is where if you've primary age children, you can, you know, speak to other parents and coordinate a little bit more. So we'll get them all out of the house between 3 and 4, and then they can be online 4 to 5 playing their game. So this is where other parents are your allies, you know, in this regard. So ideally, we need them out after school. We need them, you know, doing something physical and off a screen. And, you know, that's easier said than done. But then they can come back and maybe play half an hour before tea time. Then we have our tea. Then they might have another half an hour, depending on the age of your child. But it is a bad idea to just come off the school day and straight on to Fortnite or straight on to, you know, it's not healthy. So the more that we can engineer those breaks, the better.
And it sounds very much that your overall biggest tip is to plan your week, communicate with your children, agree together when the break times are, when the screen times are, how long screen time is, when they have it, and also factor in some parental me time as well, because we all need to be a bit more chilled out so that we're happier with our children as well.
And you are absolutely, we're all entitled to that. So sometimes I'll speak to parents who feel guilty that, you know, they're doing their online book club when they might think that their child needs them, you know, or they're not putting them to bed at night. But this is a really important time. You know, we are highly, you know, we're going through a lot. You know, this is, there will never be a greater test of our resilience and resolve. So again, it's important to ditch the guilt. We do the best you can, but pre-plan, because pre-planning involves less arguments later, because you always refer to your plan that was agreed. And when you're sitting down to have your family meeting or pre-planning session, try and make it fun. That's when you can brainstorm or come up with ideas. Wow, that's a great idea. I like that one. How can we all make sure we don't spend too much time on a screen in the evening? So, you know, children are full of ideas, and that's a rich context for boosting their self-esteem as well. So it is about balance. We are all looking for balance. And the Children's Commissioner talks about the 5 a day in the digital sphere. You know, so it's okay to have a little time gaming, which it is. It's great to be outside. It's great to connect with other people. It's nice to be kind to others. And children are very amenable to that message. So we all know that the scales are heavily shifted towards screen time, necessarily so. But what we are mostly concerned about is children's inactivity, not the screen time, the inactivity, their bodies sitting in that position. And my children are there from 8 a.m. till 3 on a screen doing schoolwork. So my priority is getting them out and running around. So you need to just look at the balance in your own life and think, where are we concerned? What can we do? And how can children participate in that renegotiation and that planning?
And just finally, Kathy, please just leave us on a high with lots of hope and positivity, please, because there is a bit of negativity around, but there's also a lot of positives out there if we look for them. So what would you say to us parents about how we can emerge from this lockdown time, which is far longer than we ever anticipated, and maybe take something positive out of it that we wouldn't have had there not been lockdown?
Well, I think that you've hit the nail on the head. I have met many, many families and they've written to me to tell me what a great time they're having in lockdown. So, and some of them will say, I'm really sorry to admit this, but I'm having a really good time in lockdown. I'm bond. So these families exist. I think we're all a little bit shy about admitting to the bits that maybe we don't like socializing that much on a Saturday night. Maybe we are enjoying being in our PJs whilst we're doing Zoom podcasts, you know, that type of thing. So I think we need to This is so important. When 2020 ended, you know, I can't bear hearing people say, oh, Happy New Year, good riddance 2020. I was trying very hard to say to my children, do you know what? We had so much fun in lockdown as well. Daddy saved 450 hours not commuting into London. Wow, that was fun, wasn't it? I am absolutely I'm really looking after their mental health. I want them to remember 2020 as a time in family life when things went well and there were happy moments and that we did have opportunities to do new things. The weather was beautiful. The cherry blossom was out. We got chickens. You know, we did all sorts of lovely things. So my key message is that with children, we need to present evidence to them that it's not all doom and gloom. And I would be very, very careful around children how you talk about the current pandemic. Yeah, there are adult conversations to have and there are discussions with our children. Always look for the silver linings in their lives. Oh, I'm so excited we get to play this. We get to do this. This isn't going to last forever, but look at the opportunities that we have within it. I actually think it's a very good idea to put together a collage. I did it using a really cool little app called La La Lab, and I'm not a creative person at all. And you collate all the images of fun things that happened over 2020 within family life, little moments that were fun, things they achieved, and put it together into a little book. And I've made two of those books, and I've said to the children, you know, hopefully when they're my age reading it, you know, that they will remember when people talk about 2020 and 2021 as very, very hard. I want them to remember there were moments of wonderfulness in family life. So we have a little bit of work to do there, just shaping the narrative. And that is not to deny the catastrophe that is unfolding in many areas of this pandemic, but that's not for young children. We don't want our children to feel anxious. We're going to get through this. We're nudging them through it in a resilient way. You know, we want them to look for opportunity. We want them to recognize the amazing innovation that's happening in science, which I always bring my children back to. Wow. Look at all these amazing careers that we can suddenly talk to our children about. Epidemiology, virology. Who knew there were so many professors of epidemiology across the world, you know? So it is about extracting the good, like you're squeezing a sponge and making your children not feed into that narrative that 2020 was an absolute disaster for us as a family. So this is a careful conversation to have. You need to think about it in terms of your own family life, but also the moaning that is happening among parents, you know, when really the WhatsApp parent group should be full of, do you know what? I learned something new today. I've got a new tip, guys. I'm going to share it. Or do you know what? I'm so proud of myself because I managed to get my child to write 5 sentences. How did you do it? So that is a completely different tone to the sort of the constant, you know, how badly I'm doing. Every single person has made progress today. They've taught their child something today. They've achieved something today. And we really need to get into that mindset of being proud of our achievements at the end of the day and really practicing gratitude for how well the day has gone.
Yeah, WhatsApp groups can be great for letting off steam in, but it is also important we don't bring everybody down with all our woes as well, isn't it? So maybe put in there our tips of what's worked today and where we got a smile out of our child from doing something positive or they did something in less time. You're absolutely right. And in terms of the fun, Kathy, we're sitting recording this on a Friday afternoon and after a fairly relatively stressful day of homeschooling, my kids were looking forward to a lockdown party planning session. We're having that tomorrow afternoon. Saturday afternoon, and they've been making decorations, which involves designing, colouring, drawing in and making piñata out of cardboard boxes. We got this idea from a friend. It wasn't our own, by the way. And that's something we'd never have done otherwise. They probably would have just been sitting watching screens. So we do have to look for the positives and have a bit of fun with it too.
And, you know, our repertoire of activities and ideas beyond this lockdown is just going to be astonishing. Look how technologically apt our children are now. You know, everybody has come on in terms of digital skills. So this lockdown, this period of our lives, will go at some point. And I think it's also important, Jackie, that everybody creates and dream lists of all the gorgeous things they want to do post-pandemic. And that's gorgeous, you know, planning a holiday in 2 years' time, or, you know, holiday of a lifetime, or all the things that you took for granted that you can't wait to do again. You know, that's a nice thing to do as well.
Well, like leaving the house twice a day, you mean? That's what I'm fantasizing about.
Going to the pub.
Oh, I can't wait. Just meeting friends indoors. I don't ask much out of life. Just want to go around my pal's house and share a bottle of wine, or maybe have one each. But yeah, dry January. In some ways, it's not helping. In some ways, it is. I'm finding my head's much clearer, but I'm very much looking forward to February. Dr. Cathy Weston, thank you so much for guiding us through all those key issues. I'm quite sure you've helped so many parents who are just trying to do their best by their children. We all are, aren't we? To varying degrees of success, and we'll keep trying, but I think we've got a few tips from you. So, and thank you also for having me on your podcast. And if you know other parents who might benefit from Cathy's expertise, especially during this difficult time, then please do spread the word. So just finally to say thank you once again, Cathy.
Thank you, and good luck to everybody over the period of lockdown, and all the very best to all of you. You're all doing a great job.
Thank you. Take care. Bye for now.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Get a Grip podcast.